Hi, and welcome to Artists Alive. This is a podcast where I, Gustav Zeventin Alström, interview people in the entertainment industry so that you can get inspired to do your thing. With me today is Angelique Bates. Would you say hi?
Hi!
So for the people who haven't heard our previous episodes, can't you tell them a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do?
Well, I'm best known, remembered from all that Nickelodeon 90s babies. I've done, you know, several things since then, 35 and Ticking. I was in Tim and Eric's awesome show. I've done so much humanitarian work, stand-up comedy, at Laugh Factory, Ha Ha Cafe, pretty much all over the world.
I was thinking my listeners could get to know you this episode, and you have a long career. So I just wonder if if we could talk a little bit about how you got your start in entertainment.
My mother, she put me in the industry as an infant. I was 9 months old. The first gig was a Borax ad. Yeah, it was a Borax ad. And then from there, I was working. I did an AT&T commercial. It was actually a national AT&T commercial. There used to be this telethon that used to come on the Lou Ross telethon. I feel like it was a little bit, the name was longer than that, but anyone that's listening, especially in the United States, they remember that. It was definitely a nice time. You and your family would get around the TV and, you know, watch the performers and watch them raising money. And it was just a good time. It was almost like there were a couple other, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I just completely forgot his name. But there was another one, and I'm gonna think about it. There were like three major telethons that used to go on back then. And it was just amazing. Right. And so from there, I ended up getting my first short film movie, which was pretty big for me. Bill Duke was the director of that. And then I just kept working. And then, you know, the project that you guys are familiar with is All That.
If you look back at your childhood, you know, growing up, being an actress from such an early age, that is something that not a lot of people can maybe relate to. But if you ever look back, like, what do you feel?
You know, that's actually a good question. I've never been asked that. It's very complex. It was an era where, you know, because I was so young, because a lot of people, you know, they ask me, you know, to like the industry or if I had a choice. If I had a choice, I want to say I don't feel like I would have chosen to be in the industry. I didn't really have much of a choice once I started realizing what was happening. And, you know, me being in the industry is kind of one of those things that's all you know. So you kind of just, it's a little difficult for you to just leave, especially when you've invested so much time into the industry. Part of it was happy. I absolutely loved the projects. The projects were definitely different experiences, no matter what kind of darkness may have come with it. Because I always look at the good and the bad, the pros and the cons. We'll just mention All That. You know, there are so many great people that I met when I said, like, I got to meet Aaliyah. I got to meet Left Eye. You know, I got to meet Monica DeBrat. And even producers that, you know, Malcolm Jamal Warner was like a big brother to me. So there's so many people that I got to meet that if that wasn't the catalyst for, I guess, me being introduced into the world, it would be a different world. I wouldn't be on your show right now. So there are a lot of opportunities that did come from being in the industry. Like, I got to meet Bill Duke when I did the film. You know, just even being able to do a lot of the humanitarian work that I do, my kids get to experience, you know, they get to experience a lot. So, like I said, it's an up and down answer. There's plus sides and there was negative sides. But I feel like if I could have controlled certain situations, I wish I could have. If I would have spoken up for myself and people be like, oh, but you were just a child. But, you know, there's things that you can probably do as a child just at least speak up for myself, you know, whether it's I didn't want to be in the industry anymore, or whether it was, you know, this isn't right, or, you know, I don't want to do this, you know, anything. But I always say that's water under the bridge. So, you know, you can only look forward.
But looking back at it, did you feel like you had, you know, support from friends and family pursuing acting?
No.
You didn't?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a catch-20. I guess you could say my mom was supporting me because she put me in the industry, but I can't really say it was like a support system. It was kind of like it was a job. Because, you know, you have those that support. They support whether you want to still do it or whether you, you know, you don't want to do it. I felt like I had to do it. So that's why I say, you know, I don't really feel like I had any support. And pretty much anyone that was around me was kind of just like, oh, you know, she's the star of the family. Or, you know, it wasn't like a, hey, you know, we support this. It's kind of like it was just there and everybody just rolled with it.
Do you think that it could have been easier if you had the support needed?
Yeah, I feel like if I had support across the board, it definitely would have been a different mindset. And, you know, I can't really blame anybody because this is what I always tell people. You also have to think about the era. Like, I was an 80s baby, early 80s. So my family came from, you know, the 50s, the 60s. And that was an era where it's just different. So when you're like the first one in the family that's like pretty much the celebrity, it's like this, it's all new territory. So no one really knows how to operate. It's just like, oh wow, this is happening, and it appeared to happen overnight. It really didn't, but that project with Nickelodeon, it was just so huge, it trumped everything else that I did. And it was just kind of like, oh wow, you know. So I can't really like point the finger, or, you know, I don't really blame anyone. Everyone did the best that they knew how to do.
If we talk about something else, leaving this for now, since you were around 15 years old, you've been doing stand-up comedy. And I remember the last time you were on my show, like 2 years ago, you were pushing for, you know, you getting back into stand-up after a hiatus. What got you into stand-up initially? What was the ambition of doing that?
My mother. Literally, my mom put me in everything. I'm telling you, like, I had no say so. So she actually put me in Damon Wayans' comedy boot camp that was at Laugh Factory. And that's why I said, you know, previously that, you know, you could look back at certain things, but it was such an opening for so much stuff. Like, Dave Chappelle was my mentor. Jane Moore was my mentor. Damon Wayans, you know, I'm at the iconic Laugh Factory. Those were all opportunities that would not have came, you know? That's what actually got me into it. That was my first paid gig, and I was on Entertainment Tonight at the time. Wow. And you know what? I remembered the other telethon that I was trying to remember earlier, Jerry Lewis.
Wow.
It was Jerry Lewis. Yes, that was so huge. So yeah, that should just tell you how old I am. That's the era that I come from. But that was a pretty awesome thing for me. And so with the stand-up from that, I started doing stand-up at Ha Ha Cafe. Kim Whitley and Buddy Lewis had their own weekly show, and I was, you know, one of the ones that would come do their weekly and perform. And it was just something I loved. I actually loved doing it. I will say that, you know, because I love telling jokes. I love making people laugh. But I didn't feel any pressure.
What were you talking about when you were around 15? What do you remember?
Oh, when I was 15. Okay. I was about to say, oh, what am I talking? I'm talking about life now. back then, my standard was more based off of characters and impersonations, scenarios. So it's funny, you know, they always have these reels with how Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence and them, you know, they're going back and, you know, Charlie Murphy, they're talking about things that happened back in the past and all that. So that's how I used to do my stand-up, but I was acting like it was current day. So I would have, you know, Michael Jackson and Aretha Franklin and this one character that I had, Bone Dog, all at a party, you know, like, you know, just acting crazy or whatever. It was pretty good. But you see, because I did a lot of characters when I turned 18 or when I was coming up on 18, 19, the shift was a little bit more difficult. Because, you know, I look young forever. I still do. So even though I was 15, I looked like I was 12. Then when I was 18, I still looked like I was like 15. But then I'm 18, so it's like you really, your body's developing like you're an 18-year-old. So when you're up there trying to still do like these kid impersonations, it doesn't fly. But then you can't be too adult with your routine, because then it looks weird because people don't know how old you are. So I hit like a little bumpy era. And that's when I told you I ended up kind of like retiring, because I had one show where I almost bombed, like I came real close. Was able to pull it back, but it was just the experience of that. When you've never bombed.
No, I know the feeling.
You've never bombed a day in your life and you almost bombed. That, to me, that is the worst feeling. You know, every comedian's like, you know, you haven't lived until you bombed. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I did. I lived. I bombed. And I just don't want to ever in life experience that again. So I did it. And I think I was out for like, I feel like it was almost pushing. It was good, like between either 50, no, it wasn't, probably wasn't 20, like five. No, it was 20. I think about 20 years. I was like, nope, not doing it anymore. I'm good. And then as time progressed, I noticed the comedy game was changing. And, you know, for me, comedy was fun. It started not being fun anymore. And that's the thing with me. When things start becoming feeling like work, because I feel like even if you are working, you should still enjoy it. And when you're not enjoying it, there's a problem. There's definitely a problem. So I definitely didn't want to do it. The comedy game completely changed. And I was like, yeah, no, it's not for me. And then I think after I talked to you, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm considering coming back out. So one day, because I kept on saying that for like years, I'm like, oh, I'll think about it. I'll think about it. Never did it. And one day, I just got dressed, drove to an open mic. It was at the Hollywood Comedy. And I did my first open mic in years. And actually, it went really good.
Awesome.
And so I was like, okay, I can get back to this. You know, it was a cool little room and everything. And then I just kept on doing it. And then within a month, because I'm the honorary board member for Face Forward International, the director over there was like, hey, so we're doing a benefit at the Laugh Factory. And I think originally she invited me, but I was like, oh, that's so crazy. You know, that's where, you know, I went, you know, Damon Wayans Blue Camp, that's where I graduated from. That was my first paying gig, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, I just started back after 20 years. So she's like, hey, shout out to Mandy, but she was like, hey, so you want to host? And I was like, okay. Like, that kind of wasn't what I was expecting. I was like, oh, okay, I went from 20 years of not performing to I'm just, like, doing these cool little open mics at this, like, you know, small club. It was like, hey, you want to go back to Laugh Factory? So I went ahead and said, yeah, because it was, like, technically my stand-up career started there. So it was very a surreal moment. And then when I got there and I got back on that stage, it was just, like, I got nervous for a minute because I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I haven't, like, for me, so I was around 15. That was the first and last time I was on that stage. Well, actually, no, I think I went back was when I met Tiffany. I don't even remember what we were doing. And I just recently saw her. She remembers. She was like, we were teenagers. And, and I'm talking about Tiffany Haddish. I think we were doing something. I think they were doing like a showcase. So I want to say it's pushing almost 27 years that I have been to Laugh Factory. And so just to be back there and actually doing what I love, because now, you know, like I'm heavily into the humanitarian field and just giving back. I was doing that back when I was on All That. A lot of people didn't know that I was sponsoring trucks for Feed the Children. And I would do that and they would go to Camp Pendleton. So I was always, always giving back, even as a teen.
What advice would you give somebody out there who wants to delve themselves into stand-up comedy, you think?
Have tough skin. Don't give up. Don't take a 20-year break like I did. Just keep on pushing. Just keep on pushing, because what other people are going through has nothing to do with you. They want to see you bomb. They want to see you fail. And 9 times out of 10, it's not even you. Hmm. It's just they're jealous or something, because maybe because you're up there on stage, you're actually funny. So just keep at it, especially if you love doing it and it's funny. The last piece of advice I had given someone, Tiffany, I want to say it was the last time we saw each other at the Laugh Factory before I just recently saw her again. And we were talking about the last piece of advice I gave her. And I remember she was asking me, and I was just like, we obviously know the kind of material that Tiffany Haddish does. And I remember telling her, because I was doing clean at that time. I still do clean to an extent, but I was heavily clean because, like I said, I was still a teenager coming into adulthood. And I remember telling her, I was like, look, whichever direction you're going to go, if you're going to go clean, I was like, it's really, you know, not that many clean comedians, but it's a market for that because they want that. And it's very hard to do clean. But if you're going to do dirty, because I remember her set was very dirty. And it was actually mouth dropping, actually. And I was like, but if you're going to go dirty, go all the way. Like, you can't be in between.
Right.
And she went all the way. And man, look at her now. And I remember when I just saw her a couple weeks ago, you did it. But just keep on going. Just keep on going. And don't let anyone knock you, because just being in this industry in general. And like I said, one thing I've noticed with the stand-up, it has completely changed. Well, at least in my eyes, because sometimes I wonder, I'm like, it could have always been like this. But being a youth, you don't see certain things until you end up being an adulthood. So it could have always been grimy. Just make sure it's something that you want to do and make your own opportunities. Now we have social media. Now we have so much other stuff going on where you don't have to worry about getting booked at a club. You work on your social media. I want to say his name is Justin. I'm going to end up messing up his last name. I think it's like Sylvia. And I follow him his whole career, like all the time. He started out, I believe, on social media. Hilarious. Okay. Now he's doing sold out shows.
Wow.
Don't worry about trying to, you know, sell yourself to these club owners, because there's so many politics in it. Let your number speak for you, because yesterday's price is not today's price.
And I've been noticing that you sometimes are uploading clips from when you've done stand-up onto your social media. Do you ever feel pressured into, you know, that things are supposed to be like great because, you know, you're filming for social media? Does that ever cross your mind?
No, I actually hate social media. Even though I'm promoting it, there's other people, like, it works for y'all. Like, that's what y'all do. For me, social media is stressful because for some, they do feel like it has to be perfect, especially if you're in the industry. Oh, this person's got to look this way. Oh, this person wants to look this way. Like, there's times that I just want to get on, put a hat on, maybe not have any makeup on. You know, just maybe do a video from the couch or something. But, you know, someone that's not in the limelight can do that. And they're getting all of these likes, all of these comments, right, all these follows. But if one of us gets up there, it's like, oh, my God. Like, you know, it's almost like the world has stopped. I feel like it's too much pressure for those that are in the industry, if that makes sense. And I just don't really like it. I am so behind on posts. But I always tell people that, you know, that do that and like that, you know, and post a record, I'm like, look, if you have this is a niche for you, do it, since you're already doing it. Me, I can tell you how to operate that social media and get your monetization up and everything. But me, I absolutely hate it because it's so much that goes into it.
Right.
And I guess people expect so much different. They're so judgmental when it comes to us that are in the industry, which is so weird because it's like you don't know us at all. Pretty much, I want to say we're regular people like you, because, I mean, we have jobs, but our jobs may be paying a little bit more. But sometimes it's not paying what you guys think. You know, we want to kind of just have like a regular day, a regular post day without being judged.
Right. I mean, look at Britney Spears, for example, with her dance videos on Instagram. A lot of people are doing dance videos on Instagram, TikTok, the same thing. But she gets a lot of hate for years for doing the same thing.
Exactly. They've been judging that girl for years. And I mean, they maybe they could be right, they could be wrong. I don't know. But like you said, there's other people almost doing identical things, and everybody's just like, ha, 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 it's so funny. And they're making them overnight celebrities.
Yes.
But when you have Britney Spears doing it, it's a problem. The world is weird. I will say. It's gotten, the social media has given people too much courage. Let me just say that. It's given them too much courage. Everybody thinks that they're an online med, doctor, nurse, whatever. They think that they're an online teacher, an online psychic. Like, it's crazy. It's just like, I want us to kind of go back to the days where we could just, you know, look at stuff and we like it, we comment. If we don't like it, we minded our business and kept it pushing. We weren't getting under people's posts telling them what to do on their page. And then it's the ones that follow you and tell you, oh, I hate this, or I don't like this, or you should, why are you following the person? And then it's like, it's weird because then it's like they don't like what they're seeing, but then you're helping the algorithm.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know, so social media is very interesting. I try to avoid it as much as possible. You know, a lot of times I just, you know, I might post and then get off. But you just reminded me, I haven't posted my stand-up in a while. So I think I might do one for like throwback, especially being that I have a comedy show coming up for my birthday next month in Tiffany Haddish as a host, and have an amazing lineup. Shantae Wayans, Daphne Springs, Ron G, and there's a couple other surprise guests.
Wow.
I'm not doing stand-up though, because it's my birthday. I was like, I'm not going to work on my birthday. But it's going to be an amazing feel. Oh, and Chris Lewis and Ellis Mingo. So it's going to be nice. And I created this comedy show, which I've done for like about a couple years. And it's pretty much giving other people the opportunity to get on stage. So like I mix it sometimes where I have up and coming mixed with those that are already like well known, just to give them, you know, that stage. Because like I said, so many politics in this game. You have to go through so much without getting all dark or whatever, but you have to go through so many things if you want to get to be on the stage with a headliner that is well known, or if you just even want to be at this one venue. So I kind of like open the doors for those that want to get on the stage. So this show is going to be pretty big.
Let's talk about something that I would love to know updates on and stuff, but I read in the news earlier in January in California, there were massive fires and, you know, people lost their homes and stuff. I read in the news that you teamed up with a celebrity real estate agent to help people who had lost their homes get free housing and stuff. How did that come together? How did that come about?
Jimmy V. I don't remember how I met Jimmy. That's so funny. I know Jimmy. I was on the streets pretty much helping everybody when that happened, because I was very close to home. Like, I was like right in the backyard. Like, you could look out the window and boom, it was there. I had so many people that got affected by that, and people are still affected, like, even though they're not talking about it. And I knew this was going to happen, and I kept on saying, I was just like, you know, everybody's, you know, doing the social media thing. Everybody is all on it for these couple of months. The real work is going to be 4 months later. That's when people are realizing that they don't have homes, that their whole life went up in flames. They didn't have a backup plan and all this other stuff. Then you got to deal with the mental health of it. Jimmy had posted on his page something. It was something that he was doing. He may have posted about the free housing that they were trying to push. And I didn't know anything about it. So I hit him up. I was like, yo, this is something that people need to know about. I'm like, you know, you're out here, you know, offering free housing, and I'm over here helping people who have lost their homes and everything. I said, why don't we just do a collaboration and, you know, highlight each other's causes? And he was just like, okay, yeah. Like, he, you know, we did that. We did a couple of them. It was a good thing. So I love doing collaborations. I love highlighting people's foundations and organizations and causes. Like, that's what I do. You know, I may not have a lot, but with the resources that I do have, it is. It completely trumps anything that I may be missing. You know, so at least I can give you my platform.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it's helping and And that was actually an amazing thing. Like that was pretty dope. And that was a great feeling to even be able to collab and offer that and be hope to people.
What was the most challenging thing that happened during that collaboration?
Oh my God. Well, it wasn't even so much as the challenging thing with the collaboration. Pretty much getting the word out there, but I think that's with anything, you know? If you don't have an A-list, you know, celebrity, or depending on if you don't have certain people backing you, you know, it kind of like, you know, goes to the wayside. Because even though it was a lot of people, this is what I did find, because it didn't have so much to do with the collaboration. It had a lot to do with what was going on, period, across the board that a lot of people weren't seeing. There was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes with organizations and foundations that everybody was just like, oh, we're helping. But then everybody wanted to be the star. Nobody wanted to combine their resources. Everyone wanted to be like, no, this is what I'm doing. And it's me. One of the officials, Brandon Lamar, I remember he said something and he was like, you know, everybody has their own thing that they do. If everybody would stay in their own lane and then just combine with everyone else that, you know, has their own lanes, we could get so much more done. But nobody wanted to do that. Everybody wanted to look like they were the hero. So that was the most challenging thing with that whole situation. It wasn't with the collaboration.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
My last question in this topic is, do we know how things turn out for the people who were helped? Do we know how they're doing emotionally now or dealing with trauma?
Everyone still has the mental, there's the mental health of it. The situation, the offering the housing wasn't to erase anything. It was just to technically relieve some of the stress so you could figure it out. Instead of trying to figure it out in the car, figure it out in the hotels, on the street or whatever, but the mental stress and all that, it's still there. And you know, my major is psychology, so that was one of the things I kept on telling people. I said, as a major, I know that that's really where the help is going to have to come in, and that's another reason why I even went back and was like working even more on my degree, because that's always something that I've already been into, but I was just like, we need to have more organizations that actually are helping with mental health, because it's cool. You're giving these people all these clothes and all this food and all this stuff, but if they don't have anywhere to put it, or it's only for a limited amount of time, which is what our situation was, it's a limited amount of time. What happens after? What happens after? Like I said, it was so many situations. I feel like so much more could have been done. But if everybody wasn't trying to be solo heroes, I feel like a lot more people would have gotten helped. And I feel like a lot of people have fallen through the cracks, and only certain areas started getting focused on. Like when I was doing my drives and everything, I may have started at one area, but we were traveling and I was like, no, we're going to go over here to this area and we're going to give over here. And then we're going to go over here. It's not all about, oh, we're only going over here. Because one thing they kept on saying, it was like with the Pacific Palisades, was like, oh, well, they can afford it. They didn't, da-da-da. Such and such. The thing is, at the end of the day, everybody lost a home.
Yeah.
With everything in it. Some of those people that did end up in the Palisades or wherever they ended up in, spent their last to get to where they were to have a great future for their families. And every last bit of it burnt to the ground. Ashes. Nothing to like even go back and find. Like you might have found like a broken vase or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like you can't just sit here and be like, oh, okay, boom, boom, boom. Like this is because, oh, well, they're rich and this. No, it goes bigger than that. It goes that everybody's human, and that's what people have to start realizing. Remove all the materialistic things. If people start realizing we are all human, we are all souls, and stop all the crap that people are doing and the hating, and a lot of the people that be on social media hating, you know, behind the screens, that's mental health. Like, because you're miserable and you can't figure out how to get out of the situation that you're in, then you want to bleed. I say bleeding onto other people, because there's so many people that are hurting. But if everybody just combined and come together, there's so many people that could be helped, and everybody needs to stop trying to be a solo star. If you want to be a star together.
Yes.
Use your resources. Do it all together. Stop trying to, I'm a promoter, so I'm going to throw this event, but then you don't have the resources. You don't have the nonprofit foundations. You don't know where to give it to, but you just want to be that one promoter that threw this big, function for the city, but then where did the money go to? Right. Where did the donations with the food and all that other stuff go to? You're this one organization. You did this drive. Everybody came and donated everything, but then you don't have the connections to get it out. You don't have the media connections. So now you have stuff that's just sitting over here, or then you personally, have, and you didn't give out. So like I said, there a lot of people don't even realize what goes on behind the closed doors when it comes to that. And it's really sad. It's really sad.
But getting back into what you were saying about mental health, for example, you're a mental health advocate, and I just wonder, how do you take care of your mental health when things get rough and stressful in the industry?
I eat a lot of ice cream.
Really?
I'm laughing, but that's partly true. I have protected my peace way more than I have ever done. And when I say I'm so much happier now, I have removed situations that didn't benefit me, people, surroundings. I have accepted you cannot save everybody. Mm-hmm. And some people actually like being in their situations. I don't care how crazy it is. They actually like it. Some people function off of trauma. And they like to trauma bond. That's what they do. If they're cool with that, then you got to be cool with that. It's not your place unless you're guided to do it. And I mean, literally guided, not that, you're talking to yourself and you're just like, because it's something that you really want to do and you're flipping it around, you're gaslighting yourself. If it's something that you're guided to do, then that's a whole nother story. But you got to walk away. Hmm. You can only worry about yourself. I remember someone used to tell me, it was just like, you can only control the things that you can control. If you can't control anything outside of you, stop worrying about it. Only focus on what you can control. And so that's what I started doing. I started focusing on what I can control. So creating the comedy shows, or, helping here and there, going out to Skid Row, doing things within my life. I started focusing on what I can control. And I became way, way much happier. Yeah. And if somebody was being negative in my life, guess what? I can control that. Block. Not answer your calls anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe change my number. Whatever it is, I can control what happens in this little bubble right here.
For sure. I experienced a burnout a couple of weeks ago, actually. And it was getting to the point where I wasn't, I got panic attacks from just checking my emails and just checking text messages and stuff. And, I'm studying journalism right now, and, I have this podcast to do stand up and stuff, and I can make it a healthy mix and, hanging out with friends and family and stuff. But then there were some assignments I had to do. There's a lot of practical things at a folk school studying there. And for the people who don't know what a folk school is, it's basically like a Scandinavian type of university where you do more practical work. Mm-hmm. I went out in the city interviewing nurses, COVID patient nurses and stuff, about their stressful industries, and it was taking a toll on me. And then after, having days where I just didn't feel like picking up my phone, or I was not go attending certain classes and stuff like that, I was like, okay, now there's something wrong here. And then I had to figure out what exactly I had to do to not be so burned out anymore. And it was like maybe having less responsibilities, because even though there are a lot of things that you have to do, you still need to find what's actually important, because you can't just work 24/7 around the clock and just expect things to work. Our bodies are protecting themselves from stress and anxiety. And so when one is feeling that all the time, then we need to look back at our schedules and try to fix that. So that's what I was doing. And now I do a lot better, because I don't ever want to feel like having panic attacks from just checking an Instagram DM, you know, and like not like refusing to check it just because I was like, oh, what is this person gonna say? Are they gonna ask me something? I can't do anything anymore. You know, it just wasn't fun.
I've been there. No, it's funny that I thought it was just me. There's times I just don't want to open it. Like you, because you can kind of feel the energy already coming from, and sometimes depending on what's going on, sometimes it's just us, because then when we finally do open it, we're like, oh, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, social media is just, can be very toxic. So I will say, I'm glad that you mentioned that. Another part of me protecting my peace was completely wiping out my social media. Like, I don't follow anyone. The only people I follow is my best friend who passed away. And my big brother, who, Malcolm Jamal Warner, he passed away. So actually, those are the only pages that I follow. I don't follow anyone. And one reason with that is that because of how social media is, when you follow people who they like and their interactions interfere with your news feed. So if they're like looking at all kinds of toxic stuff and weird stuff, it actually comes into your explore. And my explore was in shambles and very chaotic. And I just couldn't deal with it anymore. So I literally reset my social media. And sometimes I don't even look at, because now Instagram has it where they just throw you stuff on your feed now. Sometimes I don't even literally look at that. I just, like I said, I load whatever the footage is and then I keep it pushing. But one thing that's very important, and this is something I'm working better on, is getting rest. You know, it's, you have to get rest. Sometimes you have to pull yourself away from whatever it is, because I'll keep on going and then I'm looking up and it's like early in the morning. It's like you have to get rest, because if your body is starting to shut down, then you're not going to accomplish anything. And then the anxiety and all that stuff actually starts creeping in, because you really didn't get any rest and you're already, your nerves are already kind of like frazzled as it is. So definitely get your rest.
My last mental health question, or maybe it's not, who knows? We're going to have to stick around for it. Do you think it's important for a person who grows up as a child star to have like a plan on how to protect their mental health?
It's very important. I will say the era that we are in right now, the younger generation is very smart. They're really in tune with the whole meditation and how to relax, and as opposed to when I was growing up. I feel like they definitely, especially the times are way worse too from when I was growing up. It's even more important to protect your peace, because there's so much toxicity out there. And it's in the music. It's on the TV. It's on social media. Now it's just like literally people are sitting here like this the whole time, walking down the street. Like this, like you're not even seeing their face. You know, they could be sitting here getting ready to get clipped as they're getting ready to cross the street. They'll never know.
No.
Step away from the social media. That's one of the biggest issues that I say, that I tell people, if you're coming down to protecting your peace, the first step is going to be pull yourself away from the social media. I know somebody that when he wakes up every morning, the first thing he does is on the phone. First thing, just hasn't cleared his mind, hasn't said any affirmations for the day, nothing. And it's just like, first thing is that social media. And I've been guilty of that sometimes myself, and I have pulled myself away from my son. Almost as I get on him, I'd be like, hey, wait a minute, did you brush your teeth? Did you figure out your day? Did you pray? You know, let it not be the first thing you do. It makes a difference. Even if you can just 10 minutes. If you can't do 30, if you can't do an hour, you just have to get on your social media. At least 10 minutes. Like, enjoy that the fact that you just woke up.
Yeah.
Enjoy taking your surroundings. And you have to set the tone. But if you're automatically on social media, there's so many different energies on social media that's setting your tone, believe it or not. Especially, let's just say you just saw a crime scene. You just saw, you know, someone passed away. First thing in the morning, that's not how you want to set your day. So social media is definitely a key that people should, I say everybody, because like I said, I still have my moments, and sometimes I have to check my own self, they need to work on, because that's going to be the leader of how your day goes. And then the rest will follow.
back into acting now. When I saw your website, I see that you are sometimes offering acting classes. How did you get the idea of doing that, and when was this that you started?
Everybody started asking me for lessons. Like, so it's funny. So a lot of supporters would ask me for lessons because they wanted to meet me.
Wow.
So it wasn't that they didn't act, but they were using that to meet me. So I was like, okay. And then they were actually, well, I already knew that I was good because I was like helping my kid and, you know, just helping others just in my circle with scripts. But outside of that, they were coming back and being like, oh my God, look, I booked. So I'm like, okay, maybe this is something I can do publicly. And like everybody that I've helped has booked. And like, you know, my son, he has a soulmate. Like, I'm literally his personal coach in every project that I've ever helped him with, he booked. Like, he, you know, he booked Beyonce's Black is King. He just booked the lead in Assistance City. He booked Sisters 2 with Jamar Hill. The truth is in the pudding. So I'm like, you know, let me go ahead and help those that want to get into the industry and then make it reasonable. Because that's my thing too. It's like, there's so many people out there that want acting classes and they want the experience, but there's so many scams. Right. And then the ones that aren't scams, they're just overcharging because they can. And then they're not really even getting the experience that they need. Like I said, I just wish I had had a me when I was coming up. You know, there's not too many people like me. And so, you know, someone asked me on the carpet. Actually, they asked me at Megan Good and Jonathan Majors event. What's one thing that, you know, I pretty much I want to, you know, do, or they don't have any regrets or something like that. And I was just like, no, not really. But I said, you know, pretty much not to be morbid. I said, we're all going to go. And when that time comes, I don't plan on, you know, it being anytime soon, but I want to go empty handed. I want everything that I was gifted with by God and, you know, all the gifts and everything. I want to have given my all. Literally helped everybody that I was supposed to help and do whatever it was I was supposed to do. Like, I do not want to go back with anything, because I always tell people the cemetery, the graveyards, all of that, that's the richest place. They think it's the bank. Nah, the graveyard and the cemetery is the richest place in the world, because there's so many people whose dreams died with them. Like, they had $1 million plans, ideas that would have changed the world. And it died with them.
Yeah, and that's very sad. But for the people out there who might have like a self-tape to do coming up and stuff, do you have any like tips or tricks on how to excel at like the perfect self-tape audition?
Please follow the instructions that the casting directors are giving you. That's the first thing. The casting directors are so specific. Like, even when mines are coming through, they always have the notes for all of the agencies. Like, they've said it. Like, that's one of their biggest problems, is that talent is not following the instructions. Like, I guess people are just like out there like, oh, well, so I have this idea. Even if it's an amazing idea, don't do it. Yeah. Especially if they're specifically telling you not to. They're not going to look at your tape. You're probably not going to audition with that casting director ever again. Just follow the instructions. Also, make sure that you have a solid background. That's the biggest thing that I've been hearing casting directors say really, you know, messes up a lot of people. It's like they have everything, like they might have all of this stuff behind them. Even if you don't have that much space, okay, we get a piece of cardboard. Actually, I don't know. Get some construction paper. Put it up somewhere where it's a solid color.
Yeah.
And just get, you know, do something. Because trust me, if you're not going to do it, there's somebody out there that's doing. I know people that were literally, like, I personally know somebody that was at the airport. They were traveling, but they had to get their tape and they had a deadline. They found a wall, did that audition, and booked it. So there's no excuses for anything. No. Just, you know, make sure you're doing your all. Control only what you can control, you know? Like, so like I said, if you're in a busy place, then control finding that wall and focus on the script. You know, they always say you don't have to memorize it.
Yeah.
Because if you're more focused on trying to like hold the paper, read these lines, you're not able to freely express the lines. I think those are like the main ones that I would say. And make sure that you have a reader, and preferably not someone who wants to out-act you in the self-tape.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a problem. It's almost like, who's auditioning here?
I've had the opposite problem. I've had a friend, she was like, well, I'm not good at it. I don't want to be on camera. I was like, no, I'm on camera. You can be behind the camera and just read the lines for me. And she was like, okay. And then I was ready, you know. And then it took like forever for her to say the initial line. And then I responded, and then it took like 5 years until I got she was like continuing and stuff. And I was like, no, how am I going to put this together? But then we worked on it for like half an hour and stuff. And then it made. So then sometimes you need to be the director of the person behind the camera and stuff. So I'm like, yeah, maybe. I mean, I love her, great friend and stuff, but I should be more careful and with whom I'm asking.
Yeah, that will also make and break an audition, because I've had several of those situations. It was a platform that I used to use, especially, you know, when you're on the East Coast and you're going back to the West Coast, different time zones, you have those deadlines where you might be, especially if you're on the East Coast, like, you know, like I normally am. So midnight for me is probably like early for someone else. So I would have to be on this platform, and it wouldn't be the best actors. I had this one audition. It was supposed to be a hood audition. Okay. Cannot make it up. And the other reader had a British accent. Nothing against the accent at all. It wasn't believable. It's like, you know, it's almost like some set it off boys in the hood. And then you have this person with this proper British accent that's supposed to be trying to rob me. It's not believable.
No.
It's not. So that will literally make a break an audition. It will.
Not everything has to be a hit, otherwise, you know. I'm just grateful for the experience of getting, you know, asked. What I would like to give advice on is start a podcast or do stand-up, do something where your voice gets heard. I've done auditions this year for Disney. I didn't get it, but I'm just really grateful to, you know, have been asked. And Aya Skarsgård, for example, she was casting for the main part of a new movie. And even though I didn't get it, you know, I'm really grateful that she asked me. And so just because one doesn't really get the part, there can be like, if you do something else, you know, you can still get more opportunities and get your voice out there. But also on the contrary, it can also help if you do like an interview podcast and stuff. So there are always, you know, opportunities that come with opportunities that really didn't go anywhere initially.
You know, I'm glad you actually mentioned that part, because a lot of people, and I've auditioned for so much stuff. You wouldn't even believe the number. I learned that a lot of times they already know who they want. that's just been forever. They already know who they want. Or like 9 times out of 10, you know, you'll end up watching the episode and be like, I didn't even look anything like that person. Mm. So it's just, you just weren't the look that they decided to go with. And a lot of times, and a lot of casting directors say this, they're like, sometimes it's not even about that episode. Sometimes it's not even about that movie. The fact is, now you're on the table of the casting director. If you keep on getting called in, that's actually the good sign right there. It's because you're getting called in. That means you did something right. It just, you weren't what that particular producer or director, because it goes past the casting director. It doesn't mean that the casting director did not put you in front of the producer and the director. It was just that the producer and director decided they wanted to go with something else, or they went with a family member, or they went with a girlfriend or a boyfriend or something like that. Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with you. But the casting director, that's where the goal is, because sooner or later, there's going to be something that you're going to book because you were everything, or because that casting director super vouched for you, they went ahead and took a risk.
I was thinking we could talk a little bit about goals for maybe next year. I remember when I asked this the first time you came on my show and you were like, no, I don't really do New Year's resolutions or goals like that. I just want to be happy and just do my thing. But has that changed since then? Do you have any specific goals?
I still don't do really, because I've learned that. So everyone is always like, oh, I'm doing this New Year's resolution. And you're really delayed, because technically you should have already started your New Year's, I want to say like fall, around fall, when by the time winter, you kind of, you're a little behind, because you don't wait till January 1st to start making resolutions. You're behind, because like, if you start thinking about the quarters, when you think about music and just, you know, entertainment and other things, people do things by quarters. They've already started into 2026 or whichever year it is, while you're over here like, let's, I'm gonna wait until January 1st. You're behind. You're like 3 to 6 months behind already. So if we're just gonna, you know, for the sake of conversation, say New Year's resolutions, my New Year's resolutions started months ago. Like, I'm already started booking and doing stuff for 2026, and it's just pretty much to do better than I did this year. Like, it's just to keep on doing better, not going back, continue to be happy and protect my peace and those around me and love those who love me. Like, that's, if we're just going to use that word just for like conversation's sake, my New Year's resolution is to pretty much keep people around me that love me genuinely and remove those, leave people that want to be in a certain space, leave them where they're at, and continue to work on and focus on what only I can control. If it's outside of my power, then it has nothing to do with me at all.
I would say that my little goal for next year is to, for this year, it was more like to start a thankfulness diary, basically, where I was gonna, first it started weekly and then it started bi-daily, like every 2 days and stuff, write at least three things or people I'm grateful for, and it's really improved my mental health. So I would like to continue on doing that. Also continue on studying journalism. I'm already doing like radio and podcasting professionally and stuff, but freelance for magazines is something that I would like to be doing. So yeah, you know, things are already, you know, working out, and I just want to continue on, you know, my journalism thing for next year and just keep on being grateful for every opportunity.
That's awesome. That's amazing. See, that, and that's your happiness. That's why I was telling everybody, I'm like, whatever your happiness is, just focus on whatever that is. I feel like when we start putting, not talking about you, but I feel like when some people start putting labels on it, or like, this is what I want, this is what I want, when it doesn't happen, then they start getting depressed, and then they start slowing down, and then they just start going backwards. But it depends on what it looks like to you, because you may have actually been making the motion to accomplish that, but because everybody was just focused on that one goal, they missed everything else. They missed all the wins. So I always tell her, I'm like, whatever makes you happy, like that's what you want to do. And look at you. Like, I get so excited when you send me messages. You be like, oh, so I'm doing stand-up now. Oh, so this is what happened. This is what it, I'm just like, you're doing it. Everything that you said that you were gonna do, you've done. And you're in the process of doing. So I'm really proud of you. Like, I think it's amazing. It's great to see. I know that you have hiccups, but even through those hiccups, you're still winning. Never doubt yourself. Give yourself grace. That's all I tell people, is give yourself grace.
Another thing that I just realized that I could have as a goal for next year, maybe stop texting people so much. I'm like texting people all the time. Maybe I'm like texting you all the time. Like, this is what I'm, maybe that's annoying.
I know your goal. You're going to laugh when I say this. Stop sending messages and then unsending it, because I'll be in the middle of reading and then it disappears.
Okay. Absolutely.
I'm like, what doesn't happen to the message?
But it's more like there is like a weird autocorrect or something like that. It completely changes the meaning of the message, and it's just like, no. But okay, yeah.
I'll be like, he was overthinking that message. That's what happened. Because I'll be like, oh, like I'm having my little, oh, this moment. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, wait, where did the message go?
Yeah.
And then it'll be like nothing based off of what the message was. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but it's like awkward when there are autocorrect messages. So my friend Sophia, she was thinking of getting a husky. I remember telling you this last summer when this was happening, and I was like, I don't know if it's such a good idea that you get a hussy, you know, because it was correct.
Right.
And then I didn't realize it until like an hour later, and she sent me a question mark, like, what do you mean? And it's just like, technology hates me, you know.
So, I remember that story. I do. I don't know what's been going on with my phone lately, but it's definitely been having some moments like that. And I won't notice until that question mark comes in. I'm like, oh no, that's not what I was saying at all. And then the correction message is worse than the original message. I get it.
So that maybe is something I should just stand up on. My last question to you is, do you have any like projects you're working on that you can maybe spill the tea on?
So there is a project where I just, I will just say I can't mention the project, but I did agree to come on as a producer. So I'm really excited about that. I think it's going to be a great project. I think a lot of people are going to like it. I've been actually, you know, doing producer work for a very long time. A lot of people don't even realize it. Like, a lot of people don't even realize that I'm an ordained minister too. So it's like, you know, if you want to get married, or you know somebody that wants to get married, or you know, funeral, anything, whatever, that's me, I'm a girl. But as far as the producer aspect, I think this project is going to be amazing. Like, I'm so excited. I can't wait till we start filming. The one thing I can talk about is the birthday comedy show that is next month. This is coming out on my birthday.
Yeah.
So on the 8th of December, it's a comedy show for my birthday. Tiffany Haddish is hosting. Like I said, we have Shantae Wayans, like I said before, Ron G, Daphne Springs, Chris Lewis, Alex Mingo, and it's just, I'm excited. Like I said, there's so many other surprise guests. There's people that are flying in. One of my people just like showed me their ticket today. So, you know, I'm really feeling a lot of love. And I'm just excited. And actually, like I said, so that's the show that I normally do. I just made it a birthday edition. And I love producing that show.
Wow.
And I'm just like really excited for this lineup, because it's an amazing lineup. And rarely do you get to see that many awesome people on the stage at the same time.
Right.
So I'm glad I'm able to bring some joy, you know, and happiness. And actually, two of the foundations that I'm highlighting is She Ready, which is Tiffany Haddish's foundation, which is focused on helping foster youth. And then there's the Burn Beauty Foundation, which was founded by Tanya Messenbeck, who is a burn and DV survivor. So it helps those in, you know, DV situations, and it helps burn survivors. So 20% of the ticket sales is going to go to the foundations. And we're also doing a food drive drop-off, so people can bring non-perishables, gift cards to help those that are in need. Originally, when I originally set it up, we had the government shut down, but you know, there's still people in need. And one of my buddies was just like, you know, she's like, it's just like you. She was like, it's your birthday and you're still giving back. And actually, I have a really major surprise, which you're going to see it when I post, that no one knows about. And I'm just so excited. I can't wait to do it the day of the, you know, the party. And she was just like, you're always giving back and it's your birthday. Like, you're just always trying to find ways to help people, make people, you know, laugh, happy. And that's one thing too. It's like, I just want everybody to have a good time. Like, it's been so much going on in this world. I just want that one night for everybody to forget all of their problems temporarily and just have a good time and laugh.
For sure.
And then go back home and try it again.
Thank you so much for taking your time to talk to little me, even though we had technical issues.
It's no little you. I told you that the last time. You're doing big things. It's no little you. Stop saying that.
And thanks to, actually, your followers don't really have a name yet, so I just want to push this again. If you have like a suggestion for a name, please tell Angelique that. Like, this is what we want to be called. Ariana Grande, she has her Arianators. Nicki Minaj has the Barbs. You know, you should have a name for your supporters. So if you have a name suggestion, tell Angelique that, and maybe she can take it into consideration. But thank you so much for listening to Artists Live. If you like the show, please give it a little follow wherever you get your podcast. Never miss an episode. And if you're in Sweden, you get access to new episodes like this one 9 hours before they hit Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Storytel, etc. It's free, and it's on my website. And my streaming service is called Artists Live Plus. Please check Angelique and myself out on social media, even though we try to like be a little low-key on it. But she's doing the Beyoncé thing. It shows up here and there.
My phone is more of a diva than me.
So thank you so much. And have a great day, everybody. Till next time.
Bye.